Chief Justice Steele, Justice Holland, Justice Berger. May it please the Court, I am Francis J. Truskowski. I represent Carol B. Lovett, the appellant and the executrix of the estate of Barry Bernstein. I have reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal. The circumstances and events that have resulted in this hearing have been set out in the opening brief, but certain events require emphasis. Barry Bernstein died October 4, 2007, at age 88, after a 7-year marriage to O.C. Bernstein. Both had previously been married, and Mr. Bernstein had 2 children. Mr. Bernstein enjoyed before and following his marriage a pension of $90,000 a year, and prior to his marriage, Mr. Bernstein purchased a 1/3 interest in a New Jersey condominium as tenant in common with his daughter and son-in-law, which was financed by a mortgage which all 3 signed. Mr. Bernstein executed a new will after his marriage, but referenced prior written statements bequeathing certain personalty to his children and grandchildren. In 2005, by codicil, he devised his 1/3 interest in the New Jersey condominium to his wife. Following Mr. Bernstein's death, Carol Lovett was appointed personal representative per Mr. Bernstein's will, but access to Mrs. Bernstein's house where he had resided was denied to her, and no personal records were originally made available to her. At one point in December 2007, some records were finally made available, but eventually court intervention was required to gain access to Mr. Bernstein's personality and records. Following Mr. Bernstein's death, it was clear that by his design, the bulk of his assets passed outside his will to his widow and 2 children. His children, therefore, were by necessity required to advance burial costs and other administrative costs. It was therefore clear that the condominium, which was appraised for $315,000, needed to be sold to pay the debts of the estate. Carol Lovett was willing to sell her 2/3 interest to allow this to occur, and a prospective buyer made an offer of $285,000 in the fall of 2007. However, Mrs. Bernstein did not respond to this offer. In January 2008, faced with mounting bills to maintain the condominium and having advanced funeral and administrative costs, Mrs. Lovett filed a pro se petition to sell the property. This was followed by the filing on April 30, 2008 of Mrs. Bernstein's petition for elective share, which specifically did not disclaim her 1/3 interest in the New Jersey condominium. The litigation which then followed is detailed in the facts of the opening brief. As stated in that opening brief, this case brings to this court a matter of first impression. The meaning of the term value, as used by the General Assembly in crafting the elective share statute, found at Chapter 9 of Title 12 of the Delaware Code. To address this issue, it obviously is necessary to refer to the statutory language of the elective shares chapter. 3 sections of the chapter are of particular import. Excuse me. Sections 901, 902, and 903. Section 901A reads in pertinent part, assets distributed in satisfaction of the elective share shall be valued at date of distribution. This language was inserted by a 1990 amendment to Section 901A. This 1990 amendment, in its synopsis, states that one purpose of the amendment was to clarify certain terms, but simply repeats the language of the statute itself. Quote, this section also clarifies that assets distributed are to be valued at the date of distribution, unquote. A second section is Section 903. The language of the statute, which applies to this case, which is for persons dying on or before January 1, 2008, reads, again in pertinent part, quote, property derived from the decedent by virtue of death shall be A, property which is part of the decedent's estate which passes to the survivor's surviving spouse by testate or intestate succession and which has not been disclaimed or renounced, unquote. In this case, the property devised, the New Jersey condominium, was not disclaimed. The core of this case, the value, for purposes of determining the elective share, centers on the value of a condominium located in New Jersey and devised to O.C. Bernstein. Delaware and New Jersey law each hold that the real estate, the condominium, vested in the devisee, O.C. Bernstein, that is, that it was distributed to her as of the date of death of Barry Bernstein on October 4, 2007. The third statute which must be considered is Section 902. This section implicates federal law. It also defines the elective estate. Once again, in pertinent part, it reads, the elective estate means the amount of the decedent's gross estate for federal estate tax purposes, modified as follows. 1. Less those deductions allowable under Sections 2053 and 2054 of the Internal Revenue Code of 1986. Section 902C instructs that a Form 706, that is the United States estate tax return, must be prepared. But according to the statute, it must be prepared only to compute the gross estate of the deceased. Thus, only Schedules A through I need to be completed. Schedule A lists the real estate, and in the instructions for Schedule A, the direction is that the full value of real property is to be listed. The full value is explained to be the fair market value at the time of a decedent's death. Upon completion of Schedules A through I of Form 706, Section 902 then directs that the elective estate computation requires a second step, a modification, taking those deductions allowed by 26 U.S.C. 2053 and 2054. Section 2053 lists the following: funeral expenses, administration expenses, claims against the estate, unpaid mortgages, or other indebtedness in respect to the property. Section 2054 is not applicable, as I pointed out in the brief. The court below, in coming to its conclusions, did not, however, use the date of death or the date of distribution value of the real property, the condominium. It rather introduced a new term, the economic value the surviving spouse receives. The use of this new concept of economic value, it is submitted, is reversible error. Counsel for both parties, as well as the court, agreed that the elective share statute is unambiguous. Being unambiguous, the elective share statute is not open to judicial interpretation. Rather, the plain meaning of value as of the date of distribution, as directed by Section 901A, should control. Having concluded that the elective share statute calls for an economic value rather than date of death value, the court below then addressed the completion of Federal Form 706, but disregarded the language of Section 902. Section 902 directs that the elective estate limits Form 706 to the decedent's gross estate for federal estate tax purposes, modified by the deductions which I previously referenced. The court then observed that the instructions for Schedule M needed to be filed. However, Schedule M is not included in the 9 different schedules of assets which are to be valued as of the date of death and are used to complete the total gross estate of a deceased for federal estate tax purposes. This is clear from page 3 of Form 706. For these reasons, and for the reasons presented in Lovett's opening and reply briefs, it is respectfully submitted that the reasoning and the order of the court below be reversed. As to argument 2 presented in the briefs, and as pointed out in both the opening and reply briefs, which have been filed, further administration of this estate will be necessary once 3 paintings of the estate are turned over by O.C. Bernstein to the executrix. A final accounting will then be necessary, and when done, a final determination of the elective share will then be made.
There's some suggestion in the record that the master included in her valuation of the estate paintings, but it doesn't distinguish between paintings that were already in the hands of the beneficiary or paintings that have yet to be assessed.
As I recall, Chief Justice Steele, there were 3 paintings that were not turned over by O.C. Bernstein. She just refused.
And were there others that the master was
referring to? There were others that were moved out.
Okay.
This occurred in June of 2008. I was present.
I just wanted to get clear in my own mind.
No, there are 3 paintings that still have to be
I just want to make
turned.
It clear in my mind that the master was not considering the 3 paintings you're talking about. There's something distinct from her reference to paintings.
Yes, those 3 are not.
Is there any factual dispute about that?
The order, as I understand it, when this is finally settled, those 3 paintings are to be returned to
okay.
the executrix. My closing is simply that the calculation of the elective share by the court below should be found to be premature then, for that reason. Does the court have any questions?
No. Thank you.
May it please the court, Your Honors. David Ferry, representing the appellee O.C. Bernstein. I'm pleased to be advocating that this court affirm the well-reasoned and the well-written decision of Chancellor Stroin. It is correct that the facts are clear and they are largely undisputed. Because a couple of points were mentioned, I'll address very briefly that there are still some minor disputes about certain factual matters. For example, the issue of Mrs. Bernstein denied access to her home, and secondly, the issue of Mrs. Bernstein not agreeing to sell the condominium. I submit that those factual disputes are not necessarily material to the court's determination of this appeal, but nonetheless, it's worthwhile mentioning that those issues largely turned on different points of view. It would be fair to say that the parties had a completely opposite point of view. Both parties wanted to sell the condo, but they had disputes about details such as how it would be listed, what the asking price would be, how it would be marketed, who would be sold, who would sell it, who would list the property for sale. With respect to having access to personal property that was located in Mrs. Bernstein's home, there were disputes about when it would be picked up, who would be picked up, who would be present when items were picked up, whether items would be shipped by Mrs. Bernstein. So they're really, in the big scheme of things, were not major factual disputes there. They're not material to this case, but I wanted the record to be clear that the allegations that Mrs. Bernstein denied access or refused to sell the condo are very much disputed. What is significant is, and what I will address are the 2 relevant issues before this court. And if time permits, I'll try to address some of the less significant sub-issues that have been alluded to in the briefs. First, the issue of most significant importance is, of course, the calculation of the elective share that was made by both the master and the chancellor. And at the risk of boring the court with the numbers, I'll just simply confirm again that the record of the case, the exhibits that were admitted at trial reflect that for federal estate tax purposes on Form 706, the gross estate was $545,771.23. the expenses that were listed on the 706 form that were required to be provided by the estate at the time of trial were $137,716.09, and the net estate, as reflected on the 706 admitted in evidence, was $408,055.14. The elective share calculation after that should be simple, but that, of course, is where the heart of the dispute lies. The net elective estate is simply one-third, I'm sorry, the gross elective estate is simply one-third of the net estate. One-third is $136,018.38. The issue that arises is the transfers that are to be credited against that one-third figure of $136,000. And the issue and the question that's before this court is how you determine the value of transfers that were made to the decedent, by the decedent or derived from the decedent pursuant to 12 Delaware Code 903. The statute that was in effect at the time, it's been modified slightly, but the statute in effect at the time says 903, the value of the property transferred to the surviving spouse by the decedent for purposes of Section 901A of this title is an amount which equals the value of the property derived from the decedent by virtue of death. And that's where the question arises. It is true that both sides view the statute as unambiguous, but once again, there's a different perspective on what is meant by unambiguous. Mrs. Bernstein, the widow, contends that the transfers that she received that were derived from the decedent by virtue of his death were two things. One, some joint assets, bank accounts, a timeshare, and two, a small life insurance policy, which had a value of about $5,000. Those transfers that were derived by virtue of the decedent's death are credited against the gross figure that I mentioned previously, approximately $136,000. And when you take those transfers pursuant to 903, that leaves with an elective share calculation that is before the court and in Vice Chancellor, now Chancellor Strine's decision, approximately $101,000, $101,778.15. The daughter, executrix of the estate, contends that those same numbers that I mentioned, joint accounts and life insurance, should be supplemented or added to with a $105,000 figure, that being the gross value of a one-third interest in the condominium in New Jersey at the time of death. Their position rests on the theory that O.C. Bernstein received $105,000 from that condo when, in fact, she didn't receive a penny. The appellant ignores the law that her distribution, what they referred to as a distribution of $105,000, was subject to being divested from her if needed to pay debts of the estate, that the daughter, the executrix, applied to the court to sell the real estate to pay debts, that she obtained an order from the court to allow her to sell the one-third interest to pay the debts, that she did, in fact, sell the property and brought those funds in to pay the debts, and the amount of those funds, when you add to it the value of the personal property, which was relatively minimal, $2,000 approximately, it's not enough to pay the debts which are claimed on the 706 submitted to trial, $137,716.09. The crux of the issue, then, is what is a transfer? Is it simply, as appellant states, the value, the gross value of that property at the time he passed away, or is it property, the net value of what she actually received, what she actually derived? I agree that the law of both Delaware and New Jersey would have that real estate normally pass at the moment of death to the person to whom it was left under the codicil, in this case O.C. Bernstein, or whoever it was left to by intestate distribution. But that entitlement, that vesting, is a contingent vestment. It's not a permanent one. It was subject to being divested from her, and it in fact was. The appellant adamantly, without regard to logic.
Mr. Ferrier, remind the court, when the condominium was sold and the settlement sheet, you know, was prepared and the three owners got whatever they got, what was the net amount distributed to the three owners?
I believe that the gross proceeds from the I'm sorry, I'll refer to that. It's in the appendix to Appellant's opening brief. It was correspondence starting with A69. And the calculations that are in the appendix to appellant's opening brief indicates the net proceeds of sale for the two-thirds interest was $69,664.98. The net proceeds of sale for the one-third interest after deduction of various expenses, reimbursement for mortgage escrow, and condo fees amounted to net proceeds of $1,976.01. These numbers are reflected on A71 and A72 of the transcript. The amount, relatively de minimis and clearly not enough to pay all of the debts. Again, the position of the appellant is that they should simply ignore the logic of what was actually derived and received after the one-third value of the condo was divested from Mrs. Bernstein, and ignore that reality and simply argue that she was entitled to $105,000 at the moment of death, and that is the number to use for calculating the transfers derived by the death of the decedent.
Mr. Ferry, when you use the term divested, does that mean you agree that in the statutory scheme that value and is to be determined based on what's vested at the date of death, and therefore vested at the date of death is the same thing as distributed?
It's a little difficult to answer, as Your Honor has stated it.
I'm trying to find out how you differ with your opponent's view of how one determines when the asset's distributed.
Well, I guess it would be fair to say the asset is distributed when it's actually received. It was contingently received at the moment that Barry Bernstein died in October of 2007.
Your opponent says on date of death, the interest is vested, and vested equals distributed. Therefore, the number that should be relevant here is the appraisal of the condo at or on the date of death. Now, how does that differ with your view? Do you agree that it's vested and subject to distribution then, but somehow divested because of the circumstances of the debts owed to these by the estate?
I disagree that vested equals distributed. I think that's position of the appellant. I agree that the statute says that the value, and it's defined in the statute 903, an amount which equals the value of the property derived from the decedent by virtue of death, and I interpret derived as being actually received. And if that
but
property...
That I take as an undefined term, derived. Look at a dictionary definition?
I'm certain that I have.
No, I mean, should we, in order to see whether that's a correct interpretation of the statutory intent, is that simply a dictionary definition to look to? It's not a term of art. It's not defined somewhere else in the law?
I think that's a fair assessment, Your Honor. I don't know that it's defined somewhere else in the law, but the important issue, again, is that the vesting and the distribution are not the same thing, and the vesting here was not a permanent vesting. It was a contingent vesting. Anyone who receives real estate and under Delaware law and under New Jersey law is subject to having that interest in real estate divested from them. It was necessary for the executrix to, as Chancellor Strine called it, claw back that money to pay the debts of the estate, and that's precisely what happened here.
Okay, so, as we grope for the right valuation date and the right number to put on what was derived by the widow, Mr. Trzaskowski has introduced the Chancellor's term economic value. What does that have to do with the statutory scheme?
Well, that's a term that the Chancellor used, I think, to point out the illogic of the argument that's being made by the appellant. The appellant is arguing that under the statute, a $105,000 transfer that was never received, that was never given to Mrs. Bernstein, there was not a deed to her that irrevocably divested or irrevocably vested that interest in her. The Chancellor is simply saying that looking at logic, looking at the economic value, a term that he used, there was nothing actually received here. She was divested of whatever she was entitled to, and that divestment would relate back.
As I understand your position, title passed on the date of death.
Correct.
But the date after the decedent died, the person didn't have the ability to sell the land free and clear because their ability to sell it was subject to paying all of the claims against the estate.
Exactly, Your Honor.
So we don't really know, notwithstanding the fact that title passed, your argument is we don't know the value of what they got until we know what was left. And to the extent the estate sold the property to satisfy the claims, the value should be what you really got.
Correct, Your Honor. And again, the significance is that that vestment, that distribution, was not an irrevocable one. It was subject to divestment, and when that divestment was determined because it was necessary to sell the real estate to pay the debts of the estate, that divestment should relate back to the date of death and show that the reality is that Mrs. Bernstein received nothing from the sale of the condo in New Jersey. And that is the crux of the question. I think the Chancellor put it best in what he stated, and he said that the appellant ignores the reality that the widow received nothing, and she was divested of that by the appellant. And what is important is not the value measured in a vacuum, but instead the value that's actually transferred. In this case, nothing actually transferred from that one-third condo interest in New Jersey to Mrs. Bernstein.
And this, despite no explanation in the statute of this divesting mechanism, is nevertheless consistent with the statutory intent?
It clearly is. I mean, clearly the intention of the statute, the entire section 901 through 908, is to see to the fact that a spouse should be able to receive at least one-third of an estate if not otherwise provided for. So I believe the Chancellor's decision clearly implements the intention of the statute and is not a strict literal reading as the appellant is contending, which is an illogical and an absurd result. And we've cited a number of cases for the proposition why the court should not allow a strict reading to lead to an absurd result. The other issue, if I may briefly, Your Honors, is to simply talk about the question of whether or not the calculation is a premature one. The appellant claims and argues that there's more to be done, that it's necessary to file a final accounting, that there may be fees and commissions associated with that accounting, and argues that there's three pieces of artwork that have not yet been received, and that the calculations that have been made by the court and approved by Chancellor Strine should not be implemented by this court. The response is simple, that the calculation of an elective share has to be fixed at some point in time. The statute requires that it be fixed based on the 706 return. The statute does not require that the elective share calculation be based on a first and final account filed with the Register of Wills, the inventory filed with the Register of Wills, or other documents. It requires that it be based on the 706 return. The 706 return is normally due within 9 months of the date of death. The estate sought and obtained the only extension that one is permitted to obtain for a federal estate tax return, which is an extension of 6 months. And they then completed and provided their 706 return within 15 months of the date of death, the maximum time that they could get an extension. And that is the basis for the calculation of the elective share. That is the law of this case. The 706 that was admitted in evidence is the document that was testified to by both experts on both the appellee and the appellant side. It's the basis for the court's decisions, the master's draft report, the final report, and Chancellor Strine's decision. To now suggest that there be another attempt to revise that is simply not permitted by federal law, nor is it permitted by our statute. Our statute says that it's to be fixed based on the 706. The 706 was provided at the time of trial, and those figures are the ones that control. If the executor wants to file an accounting, incur more fees, or whatever they need to do, they certainly can do so, but it shouldn't impact the calculation of the elective share. There are no provisions to amend a 706. There's no provisions in the elective share statute in Delaware to file an amended accounting and to revise the calculation. I submit that the appellant essentially wants to have another shot at it, to have another attempt after being unsuccessful in the Court of Chancery with her argument that $105,000 should be credited as a transfer, that if that's unsuccessful, she wants a backup position of going back, amending accountings, filing more papers, seeking more counsel fees and commissions to further reduce the elective share. The artwork issue is a small one, but the court has asked about it, and I think it's important to address it. The artwork, like some other comments that are made by the appellant, are somewhat misleading. It is correct that there was a dispute about the artwork. The dispute centered largely on the terms of the separate written memorandum that was attached to Mr. Bernstein's will. It was handwritten, and it was largely unreadable. It was very difficult to decipher, and there were disputes about whether certain items and where they were located in the house were, in fact, to go to certain people. And that dispute led to the disagreement about these three pieces of artwork. There's a suggestion, I think, a general sort of thought that perhaps this is valuable artwork and will have a material impact on the elective share. It does not. There was no values put in the 706 for these three pieces of artwork, but there was testimony by Mrs. Bernstein at trial. There was testimony by Mrs. Lovett at her deposition that these three pieces of artwork have a value of less than $300. Mrs. Lovett herself acknowledged in her deposition that each one of these items had not been appraised, but clearly they were not worth more than $100. Mrs. Bernstein testified in the record of the case about approximate values of these items. So these artwork items are of minimal de minimis value. In summing up, it should be noted that Mrs. Bernstein, the widow, has received nothing directly from the estate of her late husband who died more than 4 years ago. She was joint owner of about $29,000 of assets and acquired a small life insurance policy left to her as named beneficiary. The estate has failed to pay the mandatory surviving spouse allowance of $7,500, which is a priority claim of the estate. The estate and the appellant and her late brother and his estate have paid absolutely nothing for the elective share of the estate. Clearly, that was not the intention of the late Barry Bernstein, who did want to leave something to his wife under his codicil. Clearly, that's not the intention of our law and the legislative assembly who passed these laws for the benefit of spouses. I respectfully request that this court affirm the decision so that this matter can be concluded.
Thank you. May it please the court. There has been some statement that by the appellee that somehow a one-third share of the estate should come in to O.C. Bernstein because of the elective share statute. The elective share statute simply gives a right of election. You choose one or the other. And the statute says that you have 6 months from time of initial administration to make that election. As I pointed out, O.C. Bernstein had all the records in her control, and finally, only through litigation were those records able to be received by Mrs. Lovett. I pointed out in reciting the facts that had a disclaimer been made of this real estate, O.C. Bernstein's elective share would be dramatically different than what I submit it is under the facts as they have played out. Disclaimer can be made. It specifically was not made here. The statute is clear. Assets distributed in satisfaction of the elective share shall be valued at the date of distribution. As I stated, both Jersey law and Delaware law are the same. The date of distribution is the date the title vests. As to the reference as to the amount of money that O.C. Bernstein was entitled to receive when the property was finally sold, it is set out in A71, and I would refer the justices to A71 and A72. It's a letter I sent to then-Vice Chancellor and now Chancellor Strine explaining how the money was divided on the sale of the property. The gross amount due to Carol Lovett, who owned two-thirds, was $136,781.76. The gross amount due O.C. Bernstein was $68,390.87. There were additions to that which increased that figure to $75,390.87. However, she was also responsible for expenses which she had not paid and which were deducted at the time of the sale. So the net to her was $1,976. But she also paid out the mortgage, which she had not paid, and the other expenses of carrying the property, which she had not paid. So that's not a correct picture as to she simply never paid anything during the pendency of this entire transaction. Now, there is case law in Delaware, and I was looking for it. I think I cited it in the reply brief, as to whether or not someone actually gets title as of a date of death. And in this instance, the case reports that title vested on the death of a father or a mother in a son, and someone in between tricks filed a judgment against that son, so that although the property was divested, the title actually, he was able to get a good claim on the by suit. I'm sorry that I can't put my finger immediately but it's cited.
You just used the term divested. What does that mean to you? Does it mean the same thing that Mr. Ferry tells us it means on the facts of this case?
No, on this case, really, it's simply, I submit that the property vested in Mrs. Bernstein as of the date of death. And that is what Section 901 says. Now, it was subject to being, mainly because of the debts of the estate, that it would have to be sold, but she knew that. She knew that from the from at least January of 2008, and as I pointed out at the beginning, had she disclaimed, that would have taken care of the problem. She would have ended up with, I figured, somewhere around $100,000. But not having disclaimed, we have gone through this roll of litigation over 4 years now. Let me see. Oh, the other point that was brought up, this is a case where a 706 was not required to be filed because the assets were not sufficient. The statute speaks to, I think it's 902C2, simply states that within 15 months you have to present a Form 706. The only thing the Form 706 that is required, however, is what is the gross? What are the gross estate assets? And as I pointed out in Schedules A through I, that lists the gross estate assets. Everything in the 706, everything in the statute says date of death values. Excuse me. As to the statement in regard to the artwork and the findings of as to the first point that Mr. Furry made in his opening remarks, I just refer the court to the master's report because she really went through all of the problems that Carol Lovett suffered in trying to administer this estate. Are there any further questions from the court?
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
We'll take the case under advisement and adjourn.